For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
This third episode that we've begun of Yaakov and Esav is comprised of two major components, one in Perek Lamed Gimel, the 33rd chapter, the 32nd Lamed Beis, and then Perek Lamed Gimel, the 33rd chapter. The two components are Yaakov's actual approach to Esav, how he gets himself ready, both in sending of the messengers and in davening and splitting up his camp and offering up the gifts, all of that. That we've done, which actually concludes with his battle with this angel slash man, which we saw at the end of last week's class. And then the actual meeting, which we have not yet covered. That's Perek Lamed Gimel, the 33rd chapter, when they actually come face to face in the dialogue that they will have. What we decided at the end of last week's class was, after we finished the first half, instead of just going on with all of our questions into the second half, by the time we get back to the first half, it's going to be, who's going to remember anything? We're going to stop now and go back in depth over the Perek that we learned. We raised a ton of questions. I'm going to summarize everything that we did in hopefully less than 1 minute in a moment. What I decided to do as we go back over this in depth is instead of doing all of Rashi and then all of Ramban and then all of Rav Hirsch, which again makes it a little bit hard to keep track of the different ways that they are learning and interpreting the Psukim, we're going to subdivide this first section into three or four mini sections, and we'll do that Rashi, Ramban, Rav Hirsch on each small little mini section as we go along. Okay. So that you'll be totally confused by the time we finish. But hopefully we'll learn a lot of things along the way as we get there. So let's do the quick summary of what we are up to. So the very quick summary, again, is as follows. Yaakov has been living in Lavan's house for about 20 years. Over the course of those 20 years, he's gotten married 4 times and has fathered 11 children and amassed great wealth. Hashem appears to him and says, time to go home to the land that I promised to Abraham, to Yitzchak, and to you and to your children. So Yaakov packs up all of his stuff, steals away in the middle of the night, and heads home. That's where our story picks up. He sends messengers on his own, initiating contact with his brother Esav, to say, I've been away for a long time, I've amassed great wealth, but I send you this message in order to find favor in your eyes. Messengers come back and say, well, he's coming out to greet you with 400 men. Yaakov is afraid, divides up his camp into two, and then he goes into the three-part preparation for Esav. He prepares for war. He offers up a tefillah. He offers up a prayer to Hashem, which we saw in itself, which had 4 different components to it. And then he sends gifts, and he sends lavish gifts. He sends enormous amounts of flock, livestock, to his brother Esav. Then the Torah says as soon as that finishes, he passes over all of his possessions over a certain river. He is left alone in the middle of the night. Listen, right? In the middle of the night, he wakes up and he says, we need to get out of here. Crosses everybody over the Yabok River and then is left alone. And then a man comes to wrestle with him. And that was the last piece that we saw last week. In the course of this wrestling match, they fight until dawn. The man who wrestles with him sees that he cannot overcome him, so he touches his hip joint, dislocates the socket, says, let me go. Dawn has broken, I need to leave. And Yaakov says, only if you will bless me. Let me just finish this. The man says, what's your name? He says, Yaakov. He says, we're not going to call you Yaakov anymore. We're going to call you Yisrael because you have wrestled with man and with God and have succeeded, and therefore your name is Yisrael. And then Yaakov turns around and says, well, what's your name? And he says, why do you need to know my name? And then he blesses Yaakov. We don't know what the content of that blessing was. And then he leaves, and then the story sort of, Yaakov limps back to his camp, and then the Torah actually stated, and this is why the Jewish people do not eat the sinew, they do not eat the sciatic nerve, because of this incident which took place here with Yaakov. And that's sort of where our story, part one, ends, and then part two will begin with the actual confrontation. We're now going to go back and rehash that, which I did probably in 30 to 60 seconds, and we're going to take a piece at a time. How long?
Two minutes. Duh. And
it could still be less than a 3-minute parenting video. Not bad. Yeah, what was the question?
Why Dawn? Why did he have to leave?
Excellent. Good question. In other words, what was it about Dawn that this man/angel says, now that it's Dawn, I got to go. I got to get out of here. I thought I could take you down before Dawn, but now that it's Dawn, you know, I have to leave. That's a fine question. We're going to get back to, I hope, Mitzvah Shem. All of that. Okay, so the first section that we're going to do is really going to be the first four verses, three verses, really. The first three verses, let's just rehash, are Yaakov sending out the angels. Let's actually read it. We'll read them inside. For those of you not familiar, let me just go over this again anyway. The white sheet, I wanted to bring the original Sefer so you could see it. The white, which is Rashi, is taken straight out of this lovely publication from Art Scroll. If you want to purchase it on your own, I highly recommend it. It's a 5-volume set. It has all of Chumash with Rashi translated as we have on our sheets. Just to make you familiar, you'll see the very top section of the page is the actual Chumash, the verses in the Chumash with their translation. Underneath that you'll see Rashi just in Hebrew script, the regular Rashi script, and underneath it says Rashi Elucidated, and that's where we'll be hanging out. We're going to be reading that section called the Rashi Elucidated, which is really a phrase-by-phrase translation of Rashi. It reads a little bit funny because it reads in English with Hebrew phrases in the middle, but it reads from left to right like a regular English book. With the Hebrew phrases, and we'll be hanging out in there reading through Rashi so we get to actually see Rashi inside in his commentary. The blue sheets look exactly the same, except instead of it being Rashi, it's actually the Ramban, Nachmanides, and that in the original looks like this.
Is that the one that you can readily read with the English a lot in there, the Ramban?
I mean, this is it, literally. This you're looking one, at it.
I want to buy a Ramban.
Your blue sheet.
Yeah, but I want to buy a book, and I'm wondering which book is the best book to buy on Ramban.
So, I mean, if you want it in English, this is the best one, no question. Okay. Yeah. And that's one. So we'll get that also. And we're also in the section entitled Ramban Elucidated in your blue sheet. When we get through it, that's where we'll be hanging out as well. I think I actually got the photocopying pretty good, because if you look at it, it's like nothing is upside down. It all looks right. Pages are all in order. Really, I'm getting good at this. Thank you. It's taking me a long time. But Baruch Hashem, Tuesday, Gail's not here on Tuesday, so I'm like on my own trying to figure this out, and then the machine broke. It was a whole to do. Okay. Our first mini section is going to be the first three verses. So let's read the first three verses. I'm just going to read them in English. And Yaakov sent angels before him to Esav his brother to the land of Seir, the field of Edom. Yaakov sends the angels, as we are familiar, and he commanded or charged them, saying, "So shall you say to my lord." He charged them, saying, "Thus shall you say." If you look, let's start right away with the differences in terms of how the translations go. If you have this sheet in front of you, do you have the verses?
Yeah.
So I want to read this verse in here first. And why don't you pass one so I could give this back to Dina? Thank you. We're going to read this verse, and I want you to pay attention to where the quotations begin as we read through different translations, so that when we see how, when we actually see it inside Rashi and others, how to read it.
Just Ramban is just different.
So in verse, we're reading Pasuk Hey, verse 5. Vayitzav Osam Lemor, and he commanded them, saying, "So shall you say to my master, to Esav." I'm reading this sheet right now. Everyone see our original just verse only, verses only sheet is what I'm reading from. Verse 5 on the first page. "So shall you say to my master, to Esav, thus said your servant Yaakov, I have sojourned with Lavan and I tarried until now." Where is the quote of what the servants, what the angels should say to Esav begin?
After Yaakov.
Right? Thus,
I have sojourned.
"Thus said your servant Yaakov." That's what they're now saying to Esav. Quote, "I have sojourned with Lavan." That first phrase, "So shall you say to my master, to Esav," who's saying that?
Yaakov.
That's Yaakov talking to his angels. Right, everyone see how it's punctuated? Take a look now again back in our Rashi sheets, in our white Rashi sheets. Verse 5, he charged them, saying, quote, "Thus shall you say," quote, "to my lord, to Esav, so said your servant Yaakov, I have sojourned with Laban and have lingered until now." The phrase, "to my lord, to Esav," who's saying that?
The
That's what the angels are saying to Esav. Okay, we'll get into this a little bit more. I just wanted, even as you're just trying to read the story, you see how much, you know, the commentators can write influence. Was that, that probably wasn't very clear, but I want to, was that, you follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay. I'm not going to drive you crazy. We're going to get back to that. In any case, let's just do the basics and we'll read it inside. Bottom line is Yaakov sends angels. He sends to them, I want you to say to my brother, to Esav, this is what your servant Yaakov has said. I have sojourned with Laban. I've lived with him for a very long time. I have delayed coming back. I have acquired ox, donkeys, flock, servants, maidservants, and I'm sending to tell my Lord to find favor in your eyes. And I'm telling you all this. The reason why I am telling you this is so that I should find favor in your eyes. That's going to be our mini section, part one. We'll take a look at Rashi and Ramban today. That's Yaakov's opening line. He sends these angels to Esav to tell him what he's acquired, how long he's been away, and that he's telling him that in order to find favor in his eyes. Okay, so far so good? Okay, let's take a look at Rashi. So we're in our white sheets. We're going to take a look at Rashi by Yishlach Yaakov Malachim, verse 4 on page 360. Let me just go over one other detail. The reason why it's so confusing to read out of these books is because in the actual section that we're going to be doing, the Rashi elucidated, it reads like an English book. It reads from left to right, even though there are Hebrew phrases interjected, but we're just going to translate them. The book itself is printed like a Hebrew book so that it goes from right to left. So that page 360 is on the right-hand side of your page. Page 361 is on the left-hand side of your page. So the book is going to read like a Hebrew book from right to left, even though within the page it reads like an English book is going to read from left to right. So, but if you can manage all that, you'll be just fine when you pass your SATs and get into high school and college and so on and so forth. Okay, here we go. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim, and Jacob Yaakov sent angels, Malachim Mamish. Rashi says, this is going to mean, literally, angels. The Torah uses, does not use the words for messengers that it could have used. It used the angels, the word Amalach. And it does not mean people who were functioning as agents, Rashi says. We are literally talking here that this means angels. And where did he go? He went to the land of Seir. Let's move down to the next verse. Vayitzavo som lemor. What does he command these angels to say to his master, to Esav? Ko amar avdecho Yaakov. This is what your servant Yaakov has said. In Lavan garti, I have dwelled with Lavan. I'm reading the verse again. Vo'echar ad atan, I have lingered until now. Let's see what Rashi says about this. I have sojourned garti. Lona asisi sar v'choshuv, says Rashi. I did not become a dignitary or a notable. Ella a ger, but a mere sojourner. Eincha kedai, it does not befit you to hate me over the blessing of your father who blessed me. Havi gvir la'achecha, be a lord to your brothers. Shaharei lo niskaima be, for it has not been fulfilled in me. Says Rashi, what's the first thing that the messengers deliver? The first words they deliver to Esav? Im lovan garti, I have dwelled with lovan. Now the word garti, that I've lived, or sojourned, is an interesting word, Rashi says. He specifically chooses the word ger. Now, ger, which means to dwell, has a lot of meanings in the Chumash. A ger, probably the most common one that we're familiar with, means
a non-Jew
who converts.
Yeah.
That's how we use the word ger. Mm-hmm. Why is the word ger? Because he's a stranger. He's a foreigner who then joins in. Which also comes from the word a ger vitoshav. I am a foreigner who's just dwelling amongst you. So the word ger means to dwell, but it means to dwell specifically in the context of somebody who almost doesn't really belong where he's dwelling. I'm a visitor, I'm a sojourner, I'm just passing through. So Rashi picks up and says, that's the first thing that Yaakov has to say to Esav. Garti in Lavan. I dwelled, I lived with Lavan, our uncle, but I was like a ger. I was like a sojourner just there. I was just passing through. Why is that so significant to tell Esav that I was just passing through? Says Rashi, I didn't become a dignitary. I didn't become a nobleman. I didn't become anything of significance. And why am I saying that? Says Rashi, I'm not just saying that so that you should think I'm humble or I don't have a lot. But I know why you hated me when I left. I remember that I had to run away 20 years ago. I remember why I went to live with Uncle Lavan. It was because of the stealing of the brachas, which we studied in depth not so long ago. And what was the bracha when Esav said, we just read this in last week's parsha, who here appreciated the Torah reading yet on Shabbos?
Yeah.
Right, was that something? You know, did we spend like 8 months on something and we read it in like 15 minutes? No, there's so much good stuff. Every verse you need to stop. Like that story was, we spent so many months on that story. So, I think it was hard preparing. I had to pick out a sermon out of all the things we had done just to pick out one idea. So what was Esav says to his father Yitzchak? Did you not save me anything? Something? Give me something, Abba. And what was Yitzchak's response? I made your brother into a master over you. What can I give you? You will be a servant to him. So, I have nothing to give you that will stick. It will become his. So Yaakov says, I know why you hate me. You hate me because I got the blessing of greatness, of superiority, of dominion. So he says, nah, don't worry about it. 20 years I spent with Uncle Lavan, I was a ger. I was a foreigner. I was a stranger the whole time. I never became anything great. I never became noble. I never became a dignitary. Look, Ein Chokidai, doesn't befit you to hate me on the blessings of our father, who gave me the brach of Hevi Gvir La'achecha, be a lord unto your brothers. That was a blessing why you would hate me. But it didn't come true. It has not been fulfilled in me. So that Rashi sees a hint. And again, we're going to have to look through the questions that we ask. What was Yaakov's agenda with this? Here he initiates this conversation. He initiates the angels being sent to Esau. What did he want? So at the end of his phrase, he says, to find favor in your eyes. Well, how is he going to find favor in his eyes with this statement of, I was with Uncle Lavan, I was there for a long time, I acquired great wealth, and all of that to find favor in your eyes. So Rashi is going to say, each point along the way, Rashi is going to say, why it's a hint of, you should really like me and not hate me anymore. So number one is, I was a ger. The blessing of having become a master or ruler over your brother, not me, didn't happen to me, Esav, so that's not a reason for you to hate me. That's point number one that Rashi makes. Let's continue. Alternatively, Dover Acher, Garti, that I have dwelled, as Begematria Taryag, is a numerical value of 613. If you take the letters, the Hebrew letters for Garti, if you see that inside in the Chumash, it's Gimel, Resh, Taf, Yud. You could rearrange that and you would get Taf, Resh, Yud, Gimel, Taryag. Taryag might be a word you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. Taryag is the numerical equivalent of 613. Taf is 400, Resh is 200, is 600, Yud is 10, mm-hmm. and Gimel is 3, 613. So when we refer to the mitzvahs in the Torah, we often refer to them as Taryag mitzvahs, so 613 mitzvahs. Well, Garti is the same four letters, just rearranged. Rashi says, Yaakov was hinting something else to Esav. Not just that I never became noble and I never became a dignitary, so therefore the blessing wasn't fulfilled. But I do want you to know something, Esav, Yaakov says. I lived with Lavan, but it's as if to say, despite the fact that I sojourned with Lavan, the evil one, Tayag mitzvah shamarti, I still was able to keep the 613 commandments, velo lamadati mimasav, and I did not learn from his evil ways. There's a general question that one can ask, is it ever possible for any one human being to fulfill all Taryag mitzvahs? And the answer is no, for a lot of reasons. A, if you're a Kohen, you have a number of mitzvahs which apply to a Kohen, which wouldn't apply to a regular Jew. And if you're a regular Jew, you can't do them all. Can't be a Kohen Levi and Yisrael altogether. Can't be a man and a woman at the same time. And there's some mitzvahs which are women mitzvahs and some which are men mitzvahs. Some mitzvahs which claim the land of Israel, other land of Israel. It's impossible for any one person to fulfill all 613. That's a separate question that a person could say, how is it possible for anyone to fulfill all the mitzvahs of the Torah? Okay, separate issue. But whatever it would mean for a person to keep the laws of the Torah, so Yaakov is saying, that which is represented by the 613, I did keep. So that he's saying two things Rashi understands to his uncle, to his brother Esau. Number one, he's saying, it's not really worth it for you to hate me because the blessing that you despise, the blessing that I should become a master over you, didn't really happen. I didn't accomplish anything of significance. But I do want you to know, as I stand before you in humility saying I never really became anything, but don't think that I am a nothing, I still maintain the same spiritual stature that you are well aware of that I had growing up in our father Yitzchak's house, don't think that because I just spent 20 years with that evil Uncle Lavan that I lost that. I want you to know that I'm coming back the same way that I left. Tayag mitzvah shamarti, I kept and observed all 613 in the same way that I had in our father's house. So it's a really, literally like a double-edged sword that he's sending. Number one, I really didn't become anything. I'm not nobility. I'm not a dignitary. I didn't fulfill the blessing. But don't think that I mean to say that I'm a spiritual nobody. That I'm exactly the way that I was when I left. So that's his Rashi. That's what he meant when he said, Garti. I dwelled, I sojourned with Lavan, and I have now come on my way back. Continues Rashi in verse 6. What is the second half of Yaakov's statement that he sends to his brother Esav? I have acquired this great wealth. I have acquired shor v'chamor, oxen and donkeys. And why do I tell you this? To find favor in your eyes. Says Rashi, V'hayuli shor v'chamor, I have acquired oxen and donkey. Abba Amarli, father said to me, and what's where I am? Yeah. Father said to me, Mital hashamayim mishmonei ha'aretz, from the dew of the heavens and from the fatness of the land will be your blessings. But this, my cattle, my slaves, is neither from heavens, nor from the land. Very strange phrase. We ask the question, so I'm telling you I have lots of oodles and oodles of cattle and oxen and slaves and maidservants, and I'm telling you all this to find favor in your eyes. So we scratched our head when we read these verses and we said, well, that's an odd thing. I'm telling you that I became very wealthy, and why am I telling you I became so wealthy? That you should like me. Is that a reason that Esav would or would not like Yaakov?
Would not.
Certainly you can make an argument that would be a reason that he wouldn't like him.
Right, could go either way.
So Rashi says to them, what is the understanding? Why is Yaakov saying, look Esav, even though I became nothing as far as nobility and as far as the dignity I become, so as far as like a leader, I did nothing. So the part of the blessing that you would be concerned about that I'm going to rule over, it didn't happen. But great wealth I did get. You know, a person can have great wealth and not be a leader of a community. He's not nobility, he's not a dignitary, but he has great wealth. But why is it going to find favor in your eyes? Says Rashi, I'll tell you why. Because I also know, again, Rashi is very consistent. Every part of this message is for one goal and one goal only, which is what? To address the stolen blessing. That's his goal. I did not become the dignitary or the nobility. The blessing was not fulfilled. What was part of Abba's blessing? That you will inherit the fatness of the earth and the dew of the heavens. Fatness of the earth, what would that refer to? Crops. The earth produces its fatness in terms of grain, in terms of crops, in terms of grapes, in terms of that which the earth can produce. And from the dew of the heavens, those combine for the earth to give forth its bounty. So Yaakov says, I have great wealth, but be very careful. Look carefully at what kind of wealth I have. I have cattle, which is not a product of the fat of the earth.
It could be. It's grass. They need to feed.
Okay, but that's not considered cattle having been produced from the fatness of the earth or the dew of the heavens. That's crop. It's agriculture. Mm-hmm. So I have great wealth, but look at the type of wealth I have. Slaves and maidservants. Cattle, oxen, shor, chamor. They're not issues that you would say is the blessing of Abba. So yes, I have my great wealth, and I'm telling you all this to find favor in your eyes that you should see the blessing really hasn't been fulfilled. Now he's not saying, Yaakov is not, so fine, you can have the blessing. He's not saying, nah, I never got anything out of it anyway. He's not giving it back, he's just saying, right, in our lifetimes, you don't have to see its fulfillment in me. That would be adding salt to the wound. That not only did I swindle it from you, but now you have to see that I'm living up the life of luxury from the blessing in your face. Yaakov says, it didn't happen. Look, didn't become the dignitary or the nobleman. I did not get the fatness of the earth. Yes, I have money, but look what kind of money I have. Not money from... You know, you can imagine in a very modern day equivalent of such a story, if a son in today's world would somehow either swindle or convince his dad to give him a bigger share of the inheritance, or let's say of the business, And then the one son who was pushed out of the business was really upset about it. The son who got the business, who became very wealthy, would be very quick to point out, this money came from my investments in real estate. This was not from the business. I just want you to know, as you see me building this monster house with all of my cars and fancy clothing and vacations, I would actually send him my W-2s to say, look, my IRS, it's not from the business. The business is barely making it. Actually, the business is losing money. I made a couple of really good investments in real estate. Why would he be? He'd be very quick to do that. I don't want my brother seeing that what he got swindled out of has produced this. Now Yaakov is doing, says Rashi. Look carefully at what he says. I have cattle and slaves and maidservants. That's not the blessing that Abba gave me. He gave me the blessing of the fatness of the earth and the dew of the heavens. I don't have it. I haven't been home. I haven't gotten anything from the earth. Shur v'chamor. We don't need to do that. Rashi just points out that even though it's singular, that's it's a regular method of expression. I'm flipping over the next side of the page to page 361, the left-hand side. Second line down. And I am sending to tell my Lord to inform you that I am coming to you. Why am I sending all this? To tell you that I'm coming to find favor in your eyes, that I am well disposed towards you and seek your love. I'm not coming to impress you. I'm coming to tell you that you should know I'm seeking you out in order that we should reconnect. Now we asked, it just seems like a strange, like I'm telling you that I've been with Lavan and that I have all this stuff to find favor in your eyes. Why would Esav, oh, I really like you now. So I don't think I mentioned in this class, but there's a Maral, Rav Yehuda Lowy, who's a great 16th century philosopher, Kabbalist, Talmudist, brilliant thinker, commentary to the Chumash. So he writes an idea that there's the there's an idea that people who like each other, derech ha'oyhavim, people who are friends, who have a relationship, they share in yoneihim ze'imze, they share their matters with each other. They simply communicate. They simply talk things over. And in simply doing, it's a form of communication. Maral develops this point a couple of weeks ago when Avram was given the mitzvah of Bris Milah. So the Torah describes, or the Medrash I should say, the Torah says that when Avram was then recovering from his Bris Milah, in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, Vayera Elof Hashem, Hashem appeared to him Be'elunei Mamre, in the plains of Mamre. So Rashi comments over there, why was he in the plains of Mamre? Why does the Torah tell us he was in the plains of Mamre? Because it was a schus, it was a credit to Mamre. I think you got that right. It was a credit to Mamre. Mamre was one of Avram's three friends. And Avraham had sought out the advice of his three friends when he was given the commandment of Bris Milah, if he should do it or not. Mamre, Aner, and Eshkol, these three colleagues of his. And the Medrash says, Aner and Eshkol both said, don't do it, Avraham. It's crazy. They had different reasons, whether or not he was too old, he was never going to recover, he was going to make himself a mess amongst the nations of the world, that he was doing such a thing, mutilating his body at such an age. They said, don't do it, Avraham. And Mamre said, Avraham, who has led you, a God who has led you this far in life, this is what he wants from you, I think you should do it. So as a merit to Mamre, who gave Avraham the advice to do it, so Hashem appeared during the recovery to Avraham in the plains of Mamre, and the Torah tells us that. And the Maral asks the question, Avraham Avinu asked if he should carry out Bris Milah after being thrown into the fiery furnace, after taking his son to be slaughtered on top. He asked his colleagues about Bris Milah. So the Maral has a whole discussion of this, and his conclusion is a couple of conclusions, one of which is, he didn't ask them if he should or shouldn't do it. He spoke to them because they were his colleagues. They had a covenant amongst themselves. And friends, people who have a covenant amongst each other, communicate. They talk to each other. They don't do things without telling one another first. Not that each one has to listen to what the other says, but I have to tell you what I'm going to do, hear from you what you think, and then I'll do what I want to do. But it's the nature of a relationship that you don't do things without telling each other. As evidence, when you think you have a relationship with someone and they do something without telling you, and your response is, I was saying, how could you not have told me you were going to do that? Because when there's a relationship, that's what you do. You talk. And the morale brings this as a proof to that concept, that just like Avram spoke to his three colleagues, Aner, Eshkol, and Mamre, even though he was going to do the bris milah anyway, he didn't care what they had to say, he just felt he needed to talk to them about doing such a monumental thing before doing it. So the morale brings as a proof this episode right here, and he says that's what Yaakov meant when he said, I'm telling you all these things, limtzochein be'einecha, to find favor in your eyes. I want to develop a relationship. So what do you do with somebody who you want to develop a relationship with? Communicate with them, you talk to them, you share your life, you tell them what you've been doing for the last 20 years. If you haven't seen someone in 20 years and you want to rekindle a relationship, well, a good place to start would be, so what's gone on over the last 20 years? How you been? What's happened to you? Where'd you get all this cattle from? So the morale understands when Yaakov says, I'm telling you all these things to find favor, you didn't send him anything at this point. Remember, the gifts are going to come later. The gifts are going to come in response to Esav going out to meet him with 400 men. Here he's just telling him he has money. Why are you telling him how rich you became? And why would that find favor in Esav's eyes? Because, as Rashi says, I'm informing you that I'm coming to seek your love. And the way that you seek the love of someone else is to share your life with them. And when you share your life with someone, so then you become a part of their life, and then the relationship develops. And that's what Maron says, exactly what Yaakov was doing over your days.
Right.
That's how Rashi is. Okay, that's our first little subsection as far as Rashi goes. Let's take a look at how Ramban learns these three verses that we just read. Okay, so I would summarize Rashi by simply saying two main points. Yaakov sends the angels to his brother Esav, and he has two goals in sending the message. The message contains two components. A, I've been with Laban for a long time, and I've amassed great wealth, and I'm telling you that in order to find favor. That's the message. Why, that says Rashi, what's the goal of Yaakov? Number one, in two different places he says, to tell you that the blessing has not been fulfilled. Garti, I was a sojourner. I never really accomplished anything. I never became a leader or a dignitary of any sort. So the blessing of I will rule over you was not fulfilled. My wealth was not from the blessing, because look, it wasn't from the fat of the earth or the dew of the heavens. It's just servants and maidservants and cattle and livestock. So the blessings have not been fulfilled. And I'm telling this to you to find favor in your eyes. I just want to share that which has been going on, that you should see. I desire and seek your friendship, and I'm hoping that we will be on good terms together. That's how Rashi understands the original goal of Yaakov sending these messengers to his brother Esav. Yeah.
But all wealth is from God. God blessed him.
Correct.
To get all this. So how could he say it's not from the blessing?
Because
not the blessing from the God.
Because the blessing was, again, because it was a specific blessing, that you will have the fatness of the earth and the dew of the heavens. So I've been blessed some other way. It would be the same, it would be a similar thing, like, just I go back to the analogy that I've given of the father who has his two sons in a modern day scenario. Mm-hmm. Let's say the father had a business and he had real estate dealings.
Yeah.
And it's very common, unfortunately, right? Let's say father has, in my made-up example, he has a business and he has real estate dealings. And all the kids want the business. Nobody wants to deal with the real estate. Nobody cares. They're not interested. The fight's over the business. And the father decides one over the other, and he gives them the business to one, and the other son is fuming mad about that. And then the father divides up the real estate. So the son who got the business would be very quick to say, I got wealth. It did come from Abba, but it came from the real estate that he gave me, that I really did well with that. The business is not doing this. Even if it came from the same, I don't want to say that it came from the business, because that was the point of our contention. So I want to say that everything that I got came from somewhere else. I just don't. So that's how Rashi learns what Yaakov is doing. Yes, I got blessings that are from God, but it's not from the blessings from that Yitzchak gave me, because those were specific and this came from somewhere else. Yeah.
But he also told him that he remained a scholar.
Yes,
and so
correct.
Forth and so on, and that's the reason he's able to say this.
Yeah.
He didn't pull it out of the air.
Correct. And Rashi also was quick to point out that Yaakov is saying, I was still a righteous individual, and that just in case you think you're not going to pummel me because I'm a nothing, I'm still the same spiritual stature that I had from when I left. So as a reminder, your blue sheets. The reminder begins with an introduction. God means an introduction. It says as follows. This section, I'm reading again the same thing as before. The page 176 is on the right-hand side of the page. 177 is going to be on the left-hand side. This section, says the Ramban, was recorded in order to inform us of three things. Number one, why do we need this whole story, says Ramban? Why are we told that Yaakov met up with Esav and he had done all these preparations? What do we learn? Number one, says Ramban, that the Holy One, blessed is He, saved His servant and redeemed him from the hand of one more powerful than he. So, number one, at the end of the day, as is clear from Yaakov's preparations, does Yaakov think that he can manage Esav? Does Yaakov think that he can win? The answer we saw clearly was no. When he split up his camp, what did he say?
Right.
If I lose one, at least the other one was... Well, why didn't he say so we could split up and attack him from the front and from the back and we can wipe him out and wipe the floor with his face? No. It was, I'm going to lose. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be decimated to an extent. But, again, just simply reading the psukim, but at least I'll be able to maintain and survive. Which we already commented when we went through it. It's like one of the approaches that we have as Yaakov battles Esav is that they are physically stronger and we're in survival mode. What do I do in order to be able to survive? So Ramban says, well, at the end of the day, Yaakov's going to come out unscathed. He's not going to lose anything to his brother Esav. So point one of this story is that even though Yaakov approached it clearly thinking he was the weaker, the one who was going to have the lower hand and be destroyed, Hashem saved him from the hand of one more powerful than he, and that he sent forth an angel and saved him. So that that he was taken care of. That's number one. That's point number one. Point number two, says the Rambam, is to teach us that Yaakov did not rely on his righteousness to protect him from harm. Rather, he exerted himself with his every capability in order to secure his salvation. Very important point number two, says the Rambam. Yaakov here does not say, God will help. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say, I don't need to take care of anything. He doesn't say, I just need to continue in the Beis Medrash. Yaakov goes through everything possible in his arsenal in order to protect himself, which includes politics, sends gifts, he tries to appease. It includes military action. He prepares for war, splitting up his camp. How are we going to attack? How are we going to deal with this? And it includes the Beis HaKnesses. It includes the shul. It includes the davening. But he brings in all of them. Says Ravan, that's to teach us something. Mm-hmm. To teach you how a Jew prepares for battle against Esav. And it is not in the Beis HaKnesses alone. It is not only in the shul. It includes the political arena with appeasements and trying to bring gifts, and trying to win his favor, and it includes the military arena. How are you going to fight this war? Where are your soldiers? Are they properly trained? Do they have a plan? And this is here to teach us that's what one does. That is what one does. I've been asked many times, as you know, I've gone to APAC in D.C. a couple of years, and I've come back and I've spoken about it. It's not a religious group. It's a very, very secular Jewish organization. And, you know, part of their approach that if it's not for us, you know, the land of Israel will be destroyed, like, as if God hasn't taken care of us for the last 2,000 years and now we rely on APAC in order for Israel's survival. So there are things there that don't rub me as, you know, I wear, as a believing Torah Jew, I wear a different set of eyeglasses looking at the world and Israeli events than the folks at APAC do, which is fine. But so somebody asked, so why do you go to support it? Because Yaakov teaches us, we use everything possible and don't rely on our righteousness in order to survive attacks from Esav or Yishmael or whatever it may be. And one of them is appeasement. And you send gifts. And today, again, we would call that political maneuvering. Whatever you need to do in order to be able to get out of a war. If you could do it, you do it. And historically speaking, if any of you have the pleasure of reading the book, The Prime Ministers, it's a nice long read. Fabulous book. Mm-hmm. But if you read it, what you see clearly is that politics matters. Politics makes a difference. And having a friend here or there or here actually changes the way that things play out. Now, that interacts with a godly, divine scheme of things, and how that works is beyond me, obviously. But you can't deny that God runs the world through those kinds of maneuverings. It's just, you can't miss it. And you read a book like that on the inside account of the last 60 years of Israel's existence. Ramban says, where did we get that from? We got that from Yaakov. Yaakov sends gifts. He sends lavish gifts as an appeasement. And that's to teach us just like Yaakov, did not rely on his righteousness to protect him from harm. Rather, he exerted himself with his every capability in order to secure his salvation. That's what we do as well. And three, says Ramban, what do we learn from this episode? Letter C, there's also an allusion for future generations that everything that occurred to our forefather Yaakov with Esav would continually occur to us with Esav's descendants. This is what I have mentioned to you. This episode that we are studying now, this third episode, is the eternal battle of Yaakov and Esav. The twins who were battling in utero already, over this world and the next world, will continue to battle. And the sages are going to see, as the Ramban is pointing out right here, the way that Yaakov and Esav go about their battle now, or then I should say, is exactly the way that we're going to go about it now. What happened to Yaakov will happen to us. The way Yaakov fought it then is the way that we have to fight it now. And therefore, it's incumbent upon us to understand, to learn, and to know what Yaakov did, so that we are prepared for that, because what occurred to Yaakov will continually, says the Ramban, occur to his descendants and Esav's descendants. And it is thus fitting for us to hold fast to the path of the righteous Yaakov, that we should prepare ourselves for the three items for which he prepared himself: for prayer, for gifts to appease Esav, and for saving himself by means of war, including fleeing and thereby being saved. So sometimes war means you stand up and fight if you think you can win. And if you think you can't win, then you prepare to flee and get out of there. But that's what Yaakov did. And Yaakov is there to teach us that, as our sages have already noted this allusion in this section, and we'll mention below, and we're going to follow this theme throughout. But that's what Yaakov does. He davens. You have to daven. Yeah, you have to. But you can't stay in the Beis HaKnesses. You then got a politic, appeasement, gifts, do whatever you can do in the political arena to get out of the war. And if that doesn't work, then you get yourself ready to fight. And if you think you're going to lose, then you get an escape plan so that the most of you that can escape possibly will and can survive and regenerate Klal Yisrael. That's what Yaakov did. That's what we do. And therefore, it's here to teach us how to go about that. What's the first thing that Yaakov actually does?
Didn't he pray?
No. He split the camp. The first thing that he did is he prepared for war and survival. That was the most immediate thing. I'm going to be attacked. And what do I do? First thing is split the camp. Who's going to survive? Make sure that we're ready to deal with this.
Before the prayer.
That was the first thing that he did. Then he prays, offers up his tefillah, and then he sends all of his gifts, trying to politic and trying to avoid the whole thing. And you think that's very logical. First thing you need to do is be prepared for an immediate attack. I need to be protected. The first thing I do is I protect myself. Logical meaning, I'm saying it's logical from one perspective, but I still, maybe we should daven first. Yaakov says, no. First thing you do is make sure your women and children in camps are as best protected as they can be. And then you daven that nothing should have to happen, and then you politic as best you can. I use the word politic in some more modern word. Yaakov was trying to appease and give gifts, but I feel pretty confident that that's mm-hmm. the same thing. That's the modern equivalent of sending gifts. Right? That's what we do. We would lobby and politic and try to bribe or do whatever you can do to avoid a war. That's what Yaakov did. And he was willing to give up significant chunks of his wealth in order to avoid a war. That's what he was willing to do. He wasn't willing to give up the land of Israel. He was willing to give up... Right? Now, these are things which I were not blessed with from the fatness of the earth and the dew of the heavens, but I have all this wealth, and I will use it for this purpose of trying to appease you and avoid this war. That I am willing to do, and that Yaakov certainly tried. Okay, that's the Ramban's introduction, the three things that we learn, that A, Hashem will always save the Jewish people from those who are stronger than them. B, Yaakov did not rely on his righteousness. He did everything in his power to attempt it. And C, that this is relevant to us. And the first two things are just saying, oh, that happened to Yaakov. No, it's relevant to us because what happens to Yaakov will happen to us. And therefore, parts A and B, we need to do also. We need to not rely on our righteousness, but do everything in our power to save ourselves. And that we need to know, at the end of the day, Hashem will indeed save us from those who are stronger than us. Okay, let's move on. Verse 4. To Esav, to his brother, to the land of Seir. Says Ramban, why is Yaakov contacting Esav right now? Because the south of Eretz Yisrael is near Edom, and Yaakov's father lived in the land of the south, so therefore Yaakov had to pass through Edom, or near there, to arrive at his destination, to Yitzchak's home. So since he needs to go back to his home, that's through the south, and that's right near the kingdom of Edom where Esau was ruling. So he was anyway going to be passing pretty close by to his brother's territory. Al-Kain, therefore, Yaakov was afraid, pachad, he was concerned that perhaps Esav might hear about his travel plans and would come to confront him. Vehiktim, and therefore he went ahead and acted in advance, crossing over to page 177 on the left-hand side, and sent messengers to Esav to his land on his own. So Yaakov initiated his dialogue. He said, you know, I'm going to be pretty close. It's likely I'll sneak right in and Esav will never hear about it, but it's likely that, again, I don't know how things worked in those days, but a big tribe of 11 kids and 4 wives and all of this livestock was, you know, as we just counted just from the gift, was over 500 animals that he sent to Esav, so we could assume what he probably was traveling with was far more than that. That Esav would find out that Yaakov was traveling back, and then Esav would confront him. Right, and here you have the same political maneuvering that we deal with in our everyday lives all the time. Whatever situation, it might be the smallest little nothing, it might be something bigger. Do we initiate contact with a person who we're going to have a sticky situation with to address it first? Or do we play the chance, the risk, roll the die, they might never find out? But if they do, and they come to us, then it's going to be worse. So that's our debate. Initiate, and then deal with it on our terms as we want to, or hope that they never find out, but if they do, it's going to be not so pretty. So Yaakov took the initiative and said, I'm going to contact my brother. I don't want him to find out that I came home and then initiate contact with me. I initiated first. Was it a good move or a bad move? Says the Ramban, the sages, Chazal said, Yaakov, it was a mistake. Continues the Ramban. But the sages take Yaakov to task for this. For they say in the Medrash, like one who grabs a dog's ear, the verse in Proverbs, so is a passerby who involves himself in a quarrel that is not his. Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, writes in Proverbs, a passerby who sees there's something going on and he gets engaged in it. It's not your issue. You're just passing by. These two people are having a fight. You're like somebody who pulls a dog's ears. The dog's just sitting there. Well, what is the dog going to do when you pull his ears? Right, he's going to bite you. So you say, why are you biting me? What do you mean, why is he biting you? You yanked his ears. It wasn't your issue. Just walk on by. Says the sages to Yaakov, you are like that dog, that person who pulls a dog's ears, like a person who joins a quarrel that's not his. Say the sages, the Holy One, blessed be He, said to Yaakov, Esav is going off on his way. And then you send messengers to him, say, so says your servant Yaakov. Leave him alone. He's going off to do his thing, and you have to initiate and cause this whole thing. So even though we would say, we have this debate, as I said, all the time in our lives, like, should I say something? Should I just leave it alone? Maybe they won't find out. You know, your person's making whatever party, but they can't invite somebody to it. They're just, they don't have enough seats at the table, so they can't invite somebody. And he's like, well, should I call them and tell them that I'm doing it, but I wasn't able to invite them? Or should I hope that they don't find out? But if they do find out, then I'm going to have a hard time explaining it. Right, those are our everyday risks. So Yaakov said, let me initiate. Let me call the person and say, I really wish I could, but I just want you to know that I can't, but I'm thinking of you, that you shouldn't hear through the grapevine that I did something without. We hear that, right? It makes a lot of sense. Sages say, why are you yanking the dog's ears? Leave him alone. He's going off to live in his own territory. You're going back to your territory. Leave him alone. So the sages take Yaakov to task for this, which is of note for us to put into our back pockets as far as what we learned from this episode. Sages were not happy with Yaakov's decision to do this. In my opinion,
it is a hard call.
It's
going to kill him. Yeah.
So the Medrash thing, he was going to leave you alone. It's been 20 years. He was just, if he wanted to kill you, he would have come after you.
Even with his 400 men that are standing in front of them.
He would have come after you. How far did Yaakov run after all? He's at his Uncle Laban's house.
Okay.
You don't think Laban for a couple of bucks would have given him free rein over there?
His son said that he did kill him, though. Esav's son.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, my.
Okay.
The next part.
Very good. Very good. Well, one last paragraph. In my opinion, too, says the Ramban, this alludes to a future event, namely, that we, the Jews, initiated our own downfall at the hands of Edom of Rome. For the Jewish kings of the Second Temple period, was anyone at the Great Controversies class when we did the Sadducees and the Pharisees? So it got so bad when the Sadducees took over the government of Eretz Yisrael and they were running amok, and King Yanai Melech, Yanai Alexander Janius was persecuting the Pharisees. So the Pharisees, the Chachamim, felt they had no choice, and they invited Rome into the war. And they brought the Roman legions into Eretz Yisrael, and for a number of years it was peaceful, and then they, once they were there, everything unraveled. And so the Ramban says, this episode of Yaakov and Esav is an allusion to what was going to happen. It's foreshadowing what was going to happen. And in the same way that Yaakov initiated the dialogue with Edom, with Rome, with his brother Esav, and said, I'm here to send peace. I want to make friends with you. Why are you inviting Edom in? Why are you inviting? Leave him alone. Says Ramban, in my opinion, this foreshadowed what was going to destroy the Second Temple, that the Jews during that period invited the lion into their home. And the lion took care of the problem, but now you have a lion in your home. And yeah, maybe you had some rabbit squirrel running around that you couldn't take care of, and the lion gobbled it up, but now you have a lion in your living room. Says, let me just finish the paragraph, I'll get your question or comment in a second. For the Jewish kings of the Second Temple period entered into a covenant with the Romans, and some of them even went to Rome personally, and that was the cause of the Jews' downfall at the hands of the Romans. And this fact is mentioned in the words of our sages and is well known in the history books, that that is what had taken part as during this story, the Second Temple period. And the Ramban says that's alluded to in this episode here with Yaakov. Okay, we'll pick up Mirtz Hashem, we'll finish up the Ramban, we'll do refresh, and then we'll go into our second subsection, which is the fear that Esav instills in Yaakov as he approaches. Thank you, see you all next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.